Fire Station 1, that we remodel Fire Station 2, begin construction, pouring a slab on a new two-story Station 1, and renovate our police department to modernize it and provide great facilities for our public safety. This will be the year that we complete Phase 2 of our El Camino Real project and have beautiful arches over our street downtown and a lit tunnel that will be safe for pedestrians. More paving, more and better events, believe it or not, are being planned. And we'll have a new general plan and zoning code that really moves our future of high-quality jobs, great businesses, and really quality and more housing for our residents. So a lot of great things coming. And believe it or not, the city manager will have a high school graduate. So this is a big year, 2026. Okay, I have many things to share with you tonight. First and foremost, I want to remind the community that we have a new adventure play area at the zoo. I think the city council is having more fun than the children there in the photo on the left. I'm glad you were there in the rain. This is our new nature play area, and we kicked off with a ribbon cutting on New Year's Eve during our New Year's event. The Wild Journeys Play Zoo includes hands-on elements such as sandboxes where children can dig like a meerkat, a pretend zoo animal kitchen, a vet clinic, and outdoor play features that encourage exploration and imaginative learning. And so these are the kind of things we're seeing as we go to our next level zoo, having these experiences, having reasons for families to hang out, for young people to learn with their hands the importance of conservation and why you should care about animals and their environments. So we want to thank the sponsors who made this possible: Service Systems America, El Camino Veterinary Hospital, and the Central Coast Zoo Foundation. Thank you to them. Next, we have our 2026 backyard burn season is now open. So this is the official opening, January 12th. Permits are required. So please do not just put a bonfire in your front yard. They are free and they're available online. But we have a Before You Burn website that you should look at. And for more information, you can go to atascadero.org/fire. But burn season is open. If you need to have coffee with someone and you're finding that you're lonely, come to Coffee with a Planner. I mean, this is a great time. There is no better way to spend a morning than having coffee with our fabulous planners. We have a recommended topic that will be coming up. A couple months ago, we had introduced a ordinance on short-term rentals. And that's an important topic, I know, whether you can rent your home out, how we manage short-term rentals. We pulled that back because there was a lot of question from the community and a lot of feedback. And so we're in the process of garnering feedback. So we're going to do a few of these coffee with the planners. It's also a great time to ask about the general plan, other questions about remodeling your home or starting a business. But this specific one, we're starting to collect information and share information on short-term rentals. Regarding that, early February, we'll have a larger, more formal meeting and discussion collecting information on short-term rentals. We do not have an ordinance we're suggesting at this point in time. And then slated towards the end of February or early March, we'll come to the council with all of that information on short-term rentals and ask you again how you'd like to proceed with an ordinance based on all of that information. So we will not be bringing a final ordinance to you then, just collective information and getting your direction on that. So coffee with a planner, it's going to be a great time. All right, next, a good time, the Mother-Son Sweetheart Dance is, this is one of our newer programs, and you can see that it's January 30th and 31st. Tickets can only be purchased at the Colony Park Community Center from 9 to 5. Tickets are not available at the door, so please tell everyone you know that, because we always, it's sad to have people show up and they can't go and their kids dressed up. So this event is just about sold out, so mothers, get your ticket, because it will sell out very soon. So if you hear this and you're considering coming to the dance, it is $38 per couple for Atascadero residents. Please get your tickets now. Unfortunately, the next event, the Father-Daughter Sweetheart Dance, is sold out already. So on February 6th is sold out, Friday. So that is the 12 and under for the younger kids. The 13 and over, so if you have a daughter, these are suggested ages, by the way, so you could bring your child to either, but the music is different, but it's still a great time. Any age is welcome. February 7th will sell out probably this week, so if you want to bring your daughter, dads, go get your ticket tomorrow at the community center from 9 to 5 for $38 per couple, because we will not have extra tickets. None of the staff people have extra tickets for their friends or family. This will sell out, first come, first serve. So please, please get your ticket. It's a great time. Okay, spring youth t-ball registration is open. So this is for 2026. Look at those pictures. Great. What a great sport. We do need coaches and sponsors. And so as always, we can only accommodate the young people that we have coaches and sponsors for. So the season runs from March 24th through May 21st. This is for 4.5 to 6-year-old children. And a coaches meeting will be on March 19th. So please, if you're interested, reach out to us for spring youth t-ball. Also, spring season team registrations, these are for adults. Registration ends March 2nd, and adult social kickball ends March 23rd. So, by the way, social kickball, it's more social than kickball. And if you need something to do on a Wednesday night at Paloma Park, you go down and watch these adults play kickball, because it is pretty good. We might start selling tickets to watch. But anyway, those are the adult registrations now open. Just a few other announcements. The band concert series submission deadline is January 30th. So we always do get requests of how do I get into the concert summer concert series. This is it, and it closes January 30th. We always receive more applications than spaces. So please, if you are a band and want to participate, they're due, and they can be submitted via email or dropped off at the community center. If you are in vending or have a food truck or something else, we have a new weekend vending opportunity at Lake Park. That deadline is February 27th. So if you know someone, you can apply or send applications to events at atascadero.org or go to atascadero.org/news. We are trying a new program of having rotating food trucks near the zoo. This is to support people going to the zoo, staying, having things to eat there. And so this will be a really good opportunity that we're trying for our nice weather in the spring and summer. And finally, the Tamales Festival. We're starting to talk about that already. May 1st and 2nd will be the Tamale Festival, 10th annual, believe it or not. And we are now building interest for tamale vendors. So if you're interested, the form is available at visitatascadero.com/tamalefest. And space is limited. So this is another one. Vendors first come, first serve. So if you hear this or know a tamale vendor, tell them to get it in now. So that's what I have. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Does any member of the council have any questions on the city manager's report? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to our next item on the agenda, which is community forum. Community forum is reserved for persons wanting to address the city council on any matter that is not on the agenda and over which the council has jurisdiction. The Brown Act prohibits the council from discussing matters not on the agenda, so we cannot really get into a discussion on anything anybody brings up. But we can ask at our discretion staff to answer a quick question or perhaps contact an individual speaker. So speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we ask you to state your name at the podium. And if anybody would like to speak, please approach the podium now. And if anybody else would like to speak, please go ahead and line up so we don't have to or folks across the room. So thank you. Go ahead and first speaker.
Good evening. I'm Jonna McGuire. I am a teacher at Paloma Creek High School. If you don't know Paloma Creek High School, it's the continuation school for Atascadero Unified. A couple months ago in September, I came with some students and we had 3 traffic requests. And so we are here to give an update. And I have fewer students because some have graduated. We kind of have a revolving door in continuation high school. So I brought the one that is barely hanging on. Isaac will leave us in a couple of weeks going to Wyoming to do mechanic school.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Isaac. And I just wanted to just say thank you for the curb painting by the bus stop. It kind of helped us out to see better. And just kind of waiting on the other ones, but it's all good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for bringing your concerns to our attention. Next speaker, Mr. Oslin.
Good evening, council and city staff. I appreciate the concern that I missed the last 2 meetings. Of course, holiday season, I did go to a holiday party, which I felt was probably a better choice than coming here to hear about an urgency ordinance that I'm disappointed in, not that we did it, but that we wasted staff money because you have to come back. My understanding is in a year and make it a permanent deal. So we're doing it once again. So that's the first time I've seen our city not be fiscally responsible when the ground's wet and we're worried about fireworks, which I hate because my animals don't like them. But for the fire side, I don't know. I think it was a waste of time. Secondly, when it comes to the father-daughter and dances going on. I got in line at 9:05 in the morning when they went on sale. I was in the top 30 getting tickets, and I want to commend the staff this year. They were on the ball. They were cheery. They were making sure people knew to fill out the paperwork before they got back in line, and they did a fabulous job. So to the rec staff there that was there, congratulations. That was probably the best staff so far. So we have that. On another note, I haven't seen it on the agenda yet, so if it is, please correct me, but SloCog pushing their 1% sales tax or whatever they're going to do. I really hope that this council says no and has the gumption to tell them no. A 10-year project just doesn't work for me, for my tax dollars being tied up.
Mr. Osland, I'm going to interrupt you there because on the agenda this evening is a discussion, not a discussion, but a presentation.
Perfect. I'll talk afterwards. Thank you.
So you can, you know, speak.
That thank you. I thought I saw that, but I didn't see it in the short brief again. So thank you.
Right. It's not.
All right. Well, good to be back, and I appreciate it. And I will always keep you guys on your toes. Whether I've been in your house or socialized with you or whatever, I will still call you out. And welcome to the new year. Thank you.
Well, thank you for speaking again. And in regards, I think Mr. Lewis regards the one question, I don't know if you could.
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. I have no pleasure in correcting Mr. Osland in public, but I will do so. He is not correct. That is with land use that you bring back an urgency ordinance. So this is a non-land use item. It is a permanent ordinance. So we were efficient. Thank you, sir.
Very good. Next speaker, please.
My name is Clyde Snyder, resident of Tescadero, South End, Paloma Park. So, Phil, I'm going to disappoint you. I'm not going to get into the full rant because our mayor did what any good administrator does. He connected me with the right person tonight, which is Ryan over there. I came to and for Mr. Mayor and Mr. City Engineer, you can ignore my email that I sent last week. I had my question answered. I came to speak concerning the refill inlet pipe for Atascadero Lake. And given that typically we've been, you know, 3-4 years ago, there's two back-to-back winters. After this kind of rain, it was overflowing. And so I've gotten some little bit of information about what was happening, and I didn't realize there's abundant level of planning and consideration to the project going on, which I'm happy to hear, and I wish you Godspeed with it and all the funding that you need to get it carried out. So anyways, thank you. And will you be at the coffee? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Anybody else wishing to speak in community forum? Okay, seeing no one approach, we will close community forum. We will move on to our next agenda item, which is a public hearing regarding our ADU ordinance update or accessory dwelling unit update. That'll be presented by Mr. Dunsmore, our community development director.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight, I think we're in the same position as many other communities throughout the state of California, because I think most of us received a letter from Housing and Community Development telling us that our accessory dwelling unit ordinances needed work. And in fact, every other city in our county who I've conferred with have received similar letters. So that's why we're here tonight. We're here to just do some updates to our accessory dwelling unit code, primarily in response to the state. Now, normally we'd like to hold these code updates for a larger code update, like what we're doing this year. But the state has told us we have to do this now or repeal our whole ordinance. At first, we were going to repeal the whole thing, but then we thought, you know what? Let's just take care of it. Let's get these things done. So here we are tonight, some really minor updates. Just as a reminder, we originally adopted our accessory dwelling unit ordinance way back in 2003. At that time, it was simply called secondary dwelling units. And it was in 2025, about a year ago, that we did the primary updates. And those are the updates we sent to HCD for their approval. It took them about 8 months to get back to us. So just a few months ago, they did finally review and get back to us and a lot of other local cities and wanted to see these adjustments. Now, As you've probably heard, state law is constantly evolving, constantly changing. Lots of Senate bills to try and stimulate housing production, make housing affordability. Some of these changes really are trying to go that way, but we're just racing to constantly keep up with these bills. So the current updates tonight really just reflect compliance with housing and community development, and a lot of it's just nuances and wording. But then again, there's also another Assembly Bill, 1154, that amends the junior ADU requirements. Now, fortunately, we've got our planning manager here tonight, and she's going to get into the details, into the weeds, and probably a little more eloquently tell you about all these changes, especially on the multifamily side. So here's Kelly.
Good evening. So our first modification that we're making relates to multifamily accessory dwelling units. So our current code, we're a very infill-oriented city. We tried to convince the state that we should be building our sites out to full density or close to full density before we allow for ADUs, which can sometimes be units that do not pay development impact fees or have certain concessions that go along with them. The state disagreed, and so they are requiring that we amend our code to allow accessory dwelling units regardless of density that the site is built out to. Current language in state law does allow up to 8 detached ADUs, and it allows conversions of existing space to a number of units equal to 25% of the total units on site. That doesn't mean that a site can add 8 ADUs. If they have one unit, they only get one ADU. So there will still be land available for infill density and development, just a little bit different than we might have envisioned it. The second section that the state had some comments on was related to setbacks. We had some increased setbacks for larger accessory dwelling units. The state is holding to their minimum 4 foot regardless of the size of units, and so we are changing language related to that to reflect state law and state interpretation. As Phil mentioned, there was a new assembly bill that touched state density, state accessory dwelling unit code. The current law requires owner occupancy on lots with a junior accessory dwelling unit. This was because when the code was originally written, they kind of thought this would be a master bedroom in a house that you could have a small kitchenette in and turn into a unit, and you might share a restroom with the original house. They're finding less and less of that. They're finding that people don't want to share sanitation facilities in their homes, and so a lot of these units are completely separate units with their own facilities in them. And so the new state law removes that requirement for owner occupancy unless they do share a restroom with the primary unit. A couple other minor amendments as we went through our code, and our city attorney helped us out with that too, updating some state law references to make sure that everything is consistent. We are modifying the deed restriction section to remove that language. It's a little bit triggering at the state level, and we're making it very clear that this is just a deed notification or an agreement so that future owners of the property understand the limitations when they purchase the property. And we're adding clarification that constructing an ADU does not trigger fire sprinklers in a separate building on the site. When we did go to Planning Commission, some of the planning commissioners were new and were reading this ordinance for the first time. And when they came to the heights section, they were concerned that because a lot of our parcels on the west side specifically are very sloped, that the minimum height that the state sets for ADUs would be not feasible to build an ADU on slope sites. And so they did recommend that the council look at some alternatives for some additional height for ADUs on sloped properties. One of the options that was thrown out was just to measure height from the shortest elevation, so the uphill side of the slope. That's a different methodology than we currently use in our code and could allow for some unforeseen consequences on the rear portion of the building in terms of impact to neighboring properties and aesthetics. So option B would be to just add 5 feet to the height that would maintain the current methodology for measuring height and would give that additional allowance. So if you were to agree with Planning Commission's recommendation for some additional height, there is some code text language that we've provided that can be added into the ordinance this evening. And that would just increase the height by 5 feet for detached ADUs that complies with the underlying setbacks. So these are not the 4-foot side and rear setback ADUs, and where the footprint of the unit is located on a slope of 20% or greater. So with that, Planning Commission did recommend that council adopt the ordinance before you this evening with modifications to allow for additional height on sloped parcels. As always, the council has some alternatives tonight. You can recommend additional modifications to the proposed code, and you can determine that some more information is needed, and we can refer the item back to staff and hear this item again at a later date. That does conclude our presentation.
Okay, all right.
And we're available for questions.
Question slot.
Luke cut me off, that was it.
All right, thank you. And I notice, Mr. Knight, that the speaker or the microphone seem particularly sensitive tonight, and I need to sit farther back. Did something change, or they seem loud? Okay, got it. All right, thank you. All right, I'm going to start on my right with Councilmember Newsom and see if council members have questions.
I have no questions for staff.
Okay, Councilmember Funk.
Took a few tries on the microphone, yes. Could you just tell us if there are any major downsides to allowing the slope modification recommended by the Planning Commission as interpreted by staff?
There are not a lot of downsides to that. Adding additional height does create that allowance for buildings on sloped lots. It also allows for units to have roof form. When you have an extreme height limitation and you can't accommodate that, sometimes then people put flat roofs on their buildings in order to get that second story or the size unit that they're looking for. So generally an allowance like this would allow for that roof form and that neighborhood character to continue with what normal single family residences look like there.
Okay, thank you. And can you remind me what the restrictions are on ADA use? I know we're not changing that, but restrictions on ADUs in high fire risk areas, high and very, very high fire severity zones.
Sure. So the state has portions of state law that says as long as an ADU is constructed to current high fire building code standards, then they are allowed in those higher fire zones. We do have some restrictions in our code for areas that do not meet secondary egress standards. And we do limit those to just junior ADUs, and we don't allow detached or separated ADUs in those areas.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Thank you. And actually, I'm going to go ahead and just follow up on the fire issue or the setbacks being to be allowed down to 4 feet, I see is an issue with the building code, because anything less than 5 feet requires 1 hour construction, and it limits the amount of openings and the size of the openings and whatnot. And I'm wondering how that, I mean, it would seem to me that you can just simply say, no, you can't do it. But if you had an ADU that you're building that happens to be oriented in such a way that, say, the bedroom is on the property line side, the only window that you could put into it because of the orientation of the building is on that side, but because you're 4 feet, you can't have a window, therefore no egress. That becomes a problem. Can you just simply deny the ADU or the plan?
You, in the end, you've got to have your egress
right.
For a bedroom. So essentially, we wouldn't deny it, but we'd require that 5-foot setback if there's going to be openings, or we'd require that opening to be fire rated, which you can do as well. So there are options there, but certainly, yes, that 4-foot is going to limit your openings and the design of that if you go to that 4-foot. But again, the 4-foot's only an option. And oftentimes what we see is just the corner of a building up against the setback or a portion, and it may not affect those openings. So there's all kinds of different parameters, but certainly a good point.
Okay, I just want to make, I mean, I'm sure that that's been being looked into. On the height measuring, are we picking one or the other on this? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, you are picking one or the other or coming up with any other alternative. Our recommendation would be the one that was on the previous slide and in your staff report, to keep our methodology for measuring height the same and just adding an additional 5 feet for those sloped parcels.
So
which would be option B.
Okay, so option A, adding 5 feet. Okay, option A is measured from the upslope. So that's what's currently we do, or?
Currently, we measure from the median, the average median average slope location. And so this isn't changing any of that methodology. It's just adding an additional 5 feet to account for the additional elevation needed to accommodate the slope.
Okay, so we're not measuring from the upslope at all. That's not used.
Correct. That was mentioned by the Planning Commission, but we would recommend the other option.
Okay, and the reason I just want to clarify that is because I had a project where the house that was being the way because of the lot, it extended out over a slope. It was probably much steeper than 30% even. But because that made the average, I mean, it made the house had to be really, really low. The neighbor's house, because the slope changed just, 100 feet over, was 20 feet higher because of where the average was on the neighbor's lot. So is there a way that it could be an option for even the builder or the owner to say, well, I want the height to be measured from one way, this way versus the other way. Is that a possibility or?
The recommendation would be to stay consistent in the code and not choose. I think if there was a choice and you wanted to be as flexible as possible, you would choose option A, and nobody would need to choose the other option at that point.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm okay with the height extension, I guess, or option A even. Okay. I just want to get clarified because I just know I've come across that it's probably unusual, but it can really mess up a project if someone's building a house or even an ADU. Lastly, on the 8 units per, the 8 ADUs per, or 1 unit per, 1 AD unit per unit, up to 8 maximum. Now, I'm sure it would make a place very unrentable if they used up the entire parking lot to put an ADU to match every unit that was built, but that's something that somebody could do, right? And then essentially just tell everybody you got to park on the street.
Yeah. In short, yes. However, the state code's written sort of odd. It basically says you don't have to provide replacement parking for the parking taken away, but then again, you still have to provide some parking for the ADU. And what it does is say, hey, you can build an ADU over parking, you can do certain things, it makes it more flexible. But you can't take away all of the parking and not provide anything. So there's still some parking requirement there. So there is limitations. The biggest thing with the 8 ADU thing that concerns us, since we're on that topic, is the fact that if I've got density for 16 units and I've got 8 units already built, I'm going to choose to build 8 ADUs instead of building 8 multifamily units because my ADUs are essentially going to be exempt from development impact fees, and they're going to have more flexible construction standards and parking standards.
But there isn't anything that we can do about that because that's state mandate, right?
Correct.
Okay, so basically, I'm just making a comment and there's nothing we can do about it.
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. That's all I have. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I have several just quick questions. What is an urban dwelling unit? I gather it's not impacted by this, what we're discussing, but it is mentioned in the staff report.
So our urban dwelling unit is a phrase we use to distinguish the SB9 units, the SB9 that came out. It's been overwritten by another Senate bill since then, so we don't like using SB9 because that fades away. But an urban dwelling unit and urban lot splits are those regulated by the state's original SB9.
So not directly related to this?
Not directly related. They are additional units allowed on single family properties, but not with the same concessions that accessory dwelling units have.
Got it. And regarding the 4-foot setback, that is not affected by size of the lot. So somebody could have a 1-acre lot and decide to stick an ADU 4 feet from the neighbor's property
Correct.
Line. And there's nothing we can
Correct.
Do about that. Okay. And got it. In regards to this height issue, how does this compare with the height limitations for a primary house being built on a sloped lot?
Sure. So this still remains lower than a primary residence, which is 30 feet in our single family zones. So this still is below that to make it a secondary looking unit.
So the idea being that an ADU would has a lower height limitation, so it's not as, you know, pronounced or obtrusive to the neighbors. Is that the premise?
Yes.
Okay, got it. And okay, hold on here. And so, in regards to, I'm thinking about out on the west side when you have large acreage lots, you can do ADUs there if you have, there's some criteria in here, but again, you in that you cannot, you know, add a setback or anything else. All of these other things apply as well, even parking limitations and things.
Yes, we can't modify the setback. We can't require additional parking spaces on okay. Most of our larger lots. People don't build at 4 feet. We've had a couple on 2 acre lots, just based on buildable area, but generally they meet or exceed setbacks.
Well, I'm thinking of heavily sloped things, like if you go along Los Altos and San Marcos, where there's no place to, you know, they may have 5 acres, but there's no place to park because it drops off the road very rapidly. And so in terms of, particularly in this issue of, so if somebody has an 8-unit apartment complex, they can now build 8 ADUs on that property if it fits. And the same thing with somebody on a small lot. You know, in order to build an ADU, it still has to physically fit there. Is there a, and I know that I think it's under 750 square feet, there's no development impact fees for these? Over that, there is, right?
Correct. They're proportional to the size of the primary unit. So they're reduced, not eliminated.
Okay. But I mean, up to 750, there's no there's no development impact fees. And so, but in terms of people squeezing in, you know, as many ADUs as possible, is there a minimum size? I mean, can somebody make a 200 square foot ADU or a 300 square foot ADU?
There's a minimum efficiency dwelling unit size in the building code that I think is around 240 to 270 square feet.
Okay. So I could say, I mean, if somebody was to try to do this on a multifamily property, they might do it with some very, like, efficient studio type of thing.
They could, yes.
Got it. And then also, we say that a detached ADU, this is on page 24 of the agenda packet, a detached EDU shall be required to be equipped with fire sprinklers unless the primary dwelling unit is not required. But I thought you mentioned that we couldn't require sprinklers in ADUs anymore.
We can't. So that state law section is written very interestingly, and we had some questions about it when ADU law first came out. It's been made very clear in their interpretations and their handbook that if the primary unit does not currently have sprinklers, then we cannot require sprinklers for the ADU.
But we're saying in this text that we do require it otherwise.
No, we're changing the text to clarify that building an ADU, we're not going to force the primary unit to put sprinklers in.
But we can require it in the ADU itself?
Only if the primary unit currently has sprinklers.
Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Go ahead. You have a follow-up question?
Yeah, actually, thank you, Mayor. It occurred to me when we're talking about all these ADUs that could potentially be built, if somebody has an 8-unit apartment house, they're allowed, if they can fit 8 ADUs, do each one of those ADUs have to be standalone, or can they be a cluster of ADUs in one building, like an apartment?
So the state handbook has made that clear as well. They do have to be detached from the primary structure, but they can all be clustered together and attached to each other.
So it can be one separate building that has 8 ADUs within the building footprint.
Correct.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Thank you. All right. With that, no further questions. We'll go out and see if we have any public comment on this item. If you'd like to speak, please approach the podium.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Hoslin. I do have some questions. Does this require sewage? Or can it be done with septic or not? Could you also answer the question on if you don't have to do impact fees, do you know if you still have to do school fees? The height that you guys were discussing has now confused me. So if
My original house is 20 feet high. I could build an ADU at 32 feet high or something of that nature, or higher than the original house. So those are my regular questions. And then the other one is, how many dwelling units can you now technically put on a property? Is it 8 or is it still 4? What is it? And the setback at 4 feet is very interesting. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else in the public wishing to comment on this item? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. And if you wouldn't mind answering the questions Mr. Roslin raised. I think you may have addressed them. I know they're partially addressed in the staff report, but if you could address those very quickly.
Yes, I'll try and remember them. Hopefully you can help me if I forget. In terms of septic and sewer, those regulations are staying the same. So we do have restrictions on accessory dwelling units when you are on septic. Based on some health and safety code standards and studies that we've done, you need at least a half acre per unit. So that would include an ADU. So you'd need at least 1 acre to do a primary unit and an accessory dwelling unit on septic. In terms of the height, this would be a height allowance. So if your primary house was only 20 feet tall or 18 feet tall, you could potentially build an ADU that is taller than your primary unit, but not taller than what the underlying zone would allow for a new primary unit, should you choose to build that. Oh, impact fees and school fees. I believe state law addresses school fees, and I believe they have some exemptions for school fees as well.
Exemption in the sense that school fees are still allowed to be charged? No. I mean, it is a...
I think there's a square footage limitation where they cannot be charged. I don't know that square footage, but I think it might be 500.
Gotcha. All right, thank you. And Mr. Roslin, if you, regarding your question regarding sewers, on page 25 of the agenda, but... hold on. I think it's 25. No, I'm sorry. It's page 19 of the agenda packet does address that question. And in terms of your question of the number of units on a parcel, when we talk about the 8, we're talking about multifamily parcels. Where on multifamily parcels, we have to allow an ADU on a 1-for-1 basis, you know, of what's already in the complex up to 8. So it doesn't mean you can build 8 ADUs on your, you know, single family home lot. But to answer how many you can build, I would just get together because it changes all the time, it seems, with state law. So we hesitate to answer that here. All right. Seeing no other member of the public approach, and bring it back to council for discussion and a motion. I think the key thing, if before you make a motion, would be to address the height and what you would recommend including in your motion. And then if necessary, we'll have a discussion regarding height. Anybody?
I'm comfortable with the staff recommendation on, you know, but staff interpretation of the Planning Commission's recommendation with regard to allowing an extra 5 feet in height on slopes exceeding 20%, or okay. 20% or more.
Anybody have any objection to that approach? Okay, seeing none, then would you like to make a motion just to
approve? Do we have any other discussion we need to have?
No.
I'll move approval of the item as recommended by staff with the inclusion of the language now shown on the screen or that was previously shown on the screen with regard to an additional 5 feet in height for slopes greater than or equal to 20%.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Mayor Pro Tem Daris. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Brabeau?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0 with Councilmember Peak absent.
All right. Thank you. Now we will move on to item G2, which is the 4543 Yerba Avenue nuisance abatement cost recovery hearing that I called out of place. So I believe that our city attorney, Mr. Fleischman, will present this item.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Before you tonight is a draft resolution that confirms the abatement costs that the city incurred in the cleanup of the 4543 Yerba Avenue, and council would be thereby authorizing the placement of a lien and levy on the property taxes for that property. As council's aware, there was nuisance abatement procedures that have been engaged in over the past several months to clean up some of the outside debris at the home at 4543 Yerba Avenue with some findings of public safety and health issues. That cleanup was done towards the end of the last year, and the amount of the cleanup, as the mayor correctly pointed out, was fairly nominal given the amount of work that was done. I think there were 11 trailers filled with debris taken off to the dump by the workers on that. So under the city's nuisance abatement procedures, the city is required to conduct a public hearing to allow the property owner or any other interested party to contest the amount of the lien to be placed on the property. Given the amount involved, the property owner would have that right. So the recommendation after conducting the public hearing is to adopt the draft resolution confirming the abatement costs and authorizing the placement of a lien in the amount set forth in the staff report of $7,269.60 on the property tax rolls. And available for any questions if you have any.
All right, thank you. Does any member of the council have questions for the city attorney? I have one, and that is regarding the amount the lien being placed on the property, goes on their property tax rolls. Is that, that's not something they have to pay immediately, or what happens? I mean, ultimately, when the property is sold, we assume we would get it, but what's the steps there in terms of whether or not it's paid immediately or not?
So there's two potential avenues, three, I guess. The property owner could just pay them as they come due. They could go to default, and after, I believe it's 5 years, the property could be sold by the county for unpaid property taxes, of which this would be one, and then that would come to the city at that point. Or if the property is sold, it constitutes an encumbrance against the title that would have to be resolved through close of escrow.
Okay, so, I mean, it is essentially a current bill for the property owner to pay.
It's not correct.
Just something that hangs out there for
correct.
Got it. All right, thank you. And then my other question that I alluded to, I did drive by the property and did see that it looked like some things were starting to accumulate in front of the garage on the driveway. Not a lot, but clearly not what the after pictures showed here after cleanup. And obviously, you know, a situation like this, habits are hard to break. What though happens, I mean, if there's a reoccurrence or begins to be a reoccurrence, do we have to wait, and do the neighbors have to wait, you know, for it to get completely out of control before any action is taken? Or can there be some sort of intervention sooner in terms of code enforcement?
Well, there's certainly the code enforcement option if there are violations of the city's code. The reason we went through the nuisance abatement procedures the way we did is there was a compelling impact to life, safety, and health from the amount of debris that was there. If it's simply clutter and there's no immediate public safety hazard, then it becomes a code enforcement issue. We can go in and do citations and so on. If there's a violation of the code. In extreme cases, as you're aware, there's also the potential for the appointment of a receiver. We would have to convince a court that there are no other possible ways or no other practical ways to abate the concerns that the city has with the property. I think in this particular case, a receivership might be a step too far, but if it gets to that point, that's certainly one of the tools that the city has.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, at this point, it's just clutter. You know, it's not a health and safety issue, but it is a bad sign, if you will. So, okay, with that, I want to open this up to the public for any comment. Anybody wishing to speak on this item, please approach the podium. Okay, seeing no one approach, we will return it to City Council for a motion or discussion.
I would express appreciation to the city attorney and to all the staff and their code enforcement officer for hanging in there with this and resolving a complicated and difficult issue with as much respect as possible for all concerned. And I would move staff's recommendation that the council adopt a draft resolution concerning abatement costs and authorizing the placement of a lien and levy of a special assessment to recover costs.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Daris. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Bourbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0 with Councilmember Peake absent.
Okay, all right. With that, we will proceed to item H1, a management report regarding approval of the fiscal year 2025 annual road report. I believe that will be, I was going to say Mr. DeBar, but I see Mr. Betts taking his seat over there. So We'll turn it over to Public Works.
Actually, Deputy Director of Administrative Services, Cindy Chavez, is going to start.
Cindy's here. Okay.
Hello. Thank you, Mayor and members of the council. So this evening, we are pleased to present the fiscal year 2025 annual road report for Measure F14. So here is a brief overview of Measure F14. In July 2014, Council adopted Ordinance 581, which establishes the annual reporting requirements. As part of these requirements, the annual road report is prepared and presented to the Citizens Sales Tax Oversight Committee, or CSTOC. This report includes financial statements along with detailed revenue and expenditure information. The CSTOC did convene on December 10th, 2025 to review the annual road report and approve it coming to council. So retailers began collecting the 0.5% additional sales tax on April 1st, 2015. The Measure F14 sales tax has a 12-year life and will sunset on March 31st, 2027. Fortunately for the city, Measure L24 passed in November of 2024 by 70% of the voting public and will continue after the F14 expires. Total sales tax revenue for the period of July 2024 to June 2025 was a little under $3.3 million. Interest income was $104,282. $54,358 of it was income earned, and then the rest of that, the $49,000, was an accounting adjustment to a fair market value. In fiscal year 2025, the city invested just over $5.5 million across five separate projects, each currently at a different stage of development. So the 2024 pavement rehabilitation project was the one completed in fiscal year 2025. And as of June 30th, 2025, the balance was approximately $1.2 million. And then that concludes my part of the presentation. I will now turn it over to Mr. DeBar.
Thank you, Ms. Chavez. So the other part of this is we have a community roads brochure that we hand out. The main report has got a lot of detail, and one of the things we did from the first year we had this measure is prepare a brochure that's mailed to all the residents that kind of summarizes it. But this is our kind of a summary of what this measure has done for the city. It's pretty impressive. There's been over 50 centerline miles of road that have been paved. This represents 39% of all city maintained roads. We have 150 miles of city maintained roads. Almost $21.5 million spent. And these are neighborhood road repairs. These aren't the El Camino Real. These are the collector and local roads that really didn't have a lot of attention spent on them or money available to fix them prior to this measure. Roads are considered excellent and good, that are considered with PCI excellent and good, have increased by 15%. And more than 80 neighborhood road segments have been repaired. So this map is in the brochure, and the brochure is included in your staff report as an attachment. You can see, it might be hard to see if folks out in the audience, but the road network is, the gray lines there, but the red roads are the roads that are planned for this upcoming construction season. The green roads are the roads that have been repaired over the last 10 years of this measure. So you can see they're all over town. And some of these roads are actually being now that we repaired some of the first years are actually going to get some surface treatments done just to keep them in good shape. So it's kind of nice to see this coming around again. And then the Blue Roads are other 2026 non-F14 road projects that are going to be pursued, primarily the traffic way project there from El Camino Real up through that industrial area. This is a brochure. The one side of it, this will be a trifold, if you will, brochure. And it has that map and then also kind of a summary on the bottom what to expect in 2026. And then on the inside as well, it has a little background of the F-14, which we've included similarly in the past. It also has, you know, kind of that summary that I just mentioned. And kind of the financial statement in a snapshot. And then just some before, during, and after photos of that's actually Los Osos Road, which we did this summer. So with that, we can take any questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you. We'll start on my left with Mayor Pro Tem Darras. Any questions?
I don't have any questions. Great work, though, by the way. I think our residents should be happy, especially if they see this map and the number of roads it's been taken care of. The percentage-wise of all the roads and the amount of money that's being put into this, I think, is great. And thankfully that we did get the additional with the L24 continuation. So thank you for all your hard work on that.
Okay, I'm going to ask a couple questions before I pass it down. The way on, you just mentioned that we're doing some resurfacing on things that had been previous projects, and I'm struck by Monterey Road. It doesn't seem like it's been very many years since we redid a huge chunk of Monterey Road, but I see we're doing resurfacing here from Graves Creek to San Anselmo. Am I correct? We did a pretty thorough project on that not too long ago.
We did, and this would be, let me see, Monterey Court. We're actually doing Monterey Court, which is, you can see there on the what to expect in 2026 on the kind of lower right-hand panel of that.
Right, but it says Monterey Road from Graves Creek all the way to San Anselmo.
Oh, gotcha.
Almost a mile.
Yeah, so that section we had done before, and, you know, it's a surface treatment, so quite frequently with pavement management programs, after you do a major rehabilitation project or reconstruction, doing a surface treatment usually pops up in the 7 to 10 year range.
Okay.
So it's kind of due, and we want to keep that road in good repair.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Yes, I guess that makes sense. When you need to do at least one treatment in not too many years after it's redone. Okay.
Yeah, somewhere in the 7 to 10 year range.
Can you go to the next page of the brochure? Of the brochure. It's there. We go. That one. So in here, in the middle of this page, we say 2025 pavement rehabilitation 1.59 miles, and the report also notes that we're doing pavement resurfacing for 3.22 miles. And I'm wondering why we don't include that there, because if I'm a member of the public and I look at this and I see 1.59 miles, that's going to take about 100 years to to treat everything, versus when you add the stuff that's, you know, the other projects, you go, okay, now we're down to, you know, more of a 30-year time frame, which, you know, that's how long a road's going to last. You know, when you get on a 30-year path, you can see your way to the end. You mean, it won't be when we're here, but you can see your way to, we're going to be on top of this road thing. So I'm wondering on this brochure why we don't also include reference to the resurface mileage as well, so that the public can see that the